At the beginning of this chapter 20 that we're reading from, reference was made to Vidura and Maitreya. And if one hadn't read the earlier sections, you might not know that they had already met. The meeting is in chapter 4 of Canto 3. Vidura approaches Maitreya, and then, as I said yesterday, I'm going to read a verse from chapter 5. So the 4, as they meet, Vidura asks questions. 5, Maitreya is responding. And the particular verse, it's text 24 from chapter 5, the verse and the purport present the cause of creation. So commonly, we hear there's two causes. Like people ask, this is like when you start meeting people that don't know the Bhagavatam, and they ask this question, like it's one of the standard questions. God is all good. God is all powerful. Why does He create a place where people suffer? There are versions, but that's like the theme. God is all good, and He's all powerful, so He can do whatever He wants. And why does He make a place where people suffer? He must have made a mistake. Or there's no God. Or I'm confused. So, the common response to that is the material creation has twofold purpose, a house of detention and a house of correction. Like the prison. It's a prison house. So prisons by design are not nice. They're not comfortable. They're not fun. It's a prison. The material world is a prison for the rebellious souls to go and be restrained from hurting other people who are law-abiding or in harmony with God. So they're given a place to go. Another way of saying the same thing is God gives a facility for living entities to try Mission Impossible. Enjoy independently of God is Mission Impossible. There is no such thing. And in order to permit that, then you have to have illusion, because there's no such thing of enjoyment separate from God. So this is the world of Maya, where people are given the facility to try what they can't accomplish. So they have to be in Maya in order to try it. So that that's one of the places, or one of the reasons for creation. Now another is to correct that error, or the misplaced disposition, or misuse of free will, through so many, built within the system, are indicators this is not a place of enjoyment. That's called suffering. It tells us, whoa, I made a mistake. So, that's a common answer. If we heed the indicators within the creation and coming through representatives of God, we'll be relieved of the suffering condition. But otherwise, the facility to try to enjoy independently of God is there. And the means to restrain us from harming or causing difficulty for those who are law-abiding. Like, the Vaikuntha realm is distinct from the material realm. So, text 24 gives two additional reasons. Like, from the Lord's side. That's you know, the relationship with the living entities side. Here's the Lord side. I'll say them and then I'll read the purport. You listen carefully, you see that they're within the purport. One, Mahavishnu desires to give something, some service, something to do to the reflection of his internal potency, or Chaya Devi. He wants to give her something to do. He knows she wants something to do. He wants to give her something to do. That's one reason. If you remember from yesterday, I was using this term, Icha Shakti. Icha means desire, or wish. When the Lord's wish, you know, it happens because he desires it. That's all he has to do is desire it. And the Shaktis take care of it. So it's Icha Shakti. And the other Shaktis move when he desires or wills. So he wills for Chaya Devi to have something to do, or the reflection of his internal potency to have something to do. The other is his desire to experience, to have the living entities who have been rebellious, to come back to him in a loving mood, or to enjoy eternal pastimes with him. That's a desire. And it's important for us to remember, when we're living here, in this place, that's really what the Lord's desire is. And it's the purpose of the creation. It's the purpose of the remedial process, devotional service. It's whatever we extend Krishna consciousness to others. It's on his behalf. It's his will. It's not like ours. It's his. It's his will. And we're acting as instruments of his will. So, first one, he desires or wills for the illusory energy, Chaya Devi, to have some service. She's dormant, she's despondent, she wants something to do. He gives her something to do. But so, preceding giving her something to do is his desire for that. So the other is the desire for living entities to rejoin him in loving pastimes, loving exchanges. He desires that. And the language that's used in the verse and in the purport is because of these two wills or desires, he feels something. And it's very surprising what he feels. He feels incomplete. He who is complete feels incomplete. I'm going to say something that's, before I read the verse in purport, I'm going to say something from Sri Brahma Samhita. Again, Bhakti Siddhanta's language, where covering those I mentioned yesterday, the first five verses, or verses 2 through 5, he describes a map or a yantra or a depiction of Goloka Vrindavan. Sometimes, like you maybe you've seen pictures of or you've seen in person, in Mayapur there's the Nrisinga altar, Pallad Nrisinga. And on the front, two sides, left and right, there's a yantra. It's a metal plate, a brass or ashtadhatu plate. It's like a geometric pattern, something like a mandala, with inscriptions on it in Sanskrit. And it's a depiction of the abode of Lord Nrisingadeva, left and right. They're identical. It's called the yantra. There's mantra, and there's a yantra. It's part of worship. The yantra is a depiction of the abode of Lord Nrisingadeva. It's literally like the deity is Lord Nrisingadeva, the yantra is his abode. And he's there in his abode. So those earlier verses of Sri Brahma Samhita similarly are describing a yantra. The word is there in the text. And it's the abode of Krishna, Radha and Krishna. And then in that depiction, there's a central part, like a flower. So the central part of a flower is this dark yellow region. And then around the dark yellow region, there is petals. So the yantra describes a hexagonal central portion. And then surrounding the central portion are petals. And then surrounding the petals is another portion called Sweta Dweep. Sweta means white, Dweepa means island. And in that Sweta Dweep region, there are many things. There's a verse that lists like 10 things that are in that Sweta Dweep area. One of the things that's in the Sweta Dweep area is the Yuga avatars. Because the Leela avatars, they have their abode in Vaikuntha. The Yuga avatars have their abode in the perimeter area of Gokula or Goloka. And that perimeter area is called Sweta Dweep. And there's the Chaturvyuha, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradumna, Aniruddha. There's many things. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says in his purport, in his language that takes a dictionary and a magnifying glass to sort it out, he says that one should not think that the outer area is lesser. It's part of Goloka. In fact, he says, it makes Goloka complete. It makes Goloka complete. And then he spends a lengthy description of the Yuga avatars. Lord Chaitanya is in that region. And his mood of Krishna wishing to experience the happiness of Radha, as we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the reason, the internal reason for Lord Chaitanya's descent, along with being the Yuga avatar, one of the external reasons. The internal reason is that one. Actually, there's three of them, and he lists them, same as we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So those three. Wishing to experience the love of Radha for him, wishing to experience the happiness that she feels towards him, wishing to experience the qualities in him that stimulate that love. That makes Goloka complete. It's not lesser. It makes it complete. So that's Krishna in his completeness. And now here's Mahavishnu, who's a portion of a plenary portion. And so everything's coming from Krishna, because that's the first verse of Sri Brahma Samhita, and it's the first verse of Bhagavatam. Krishna is the source of everything. He's the absolute truth. Pram Satyam Dimahi. He's the absolute truth from which everything comes. So Mahavishnu is one of his expansions. Now, Mahavishnu is feeling incomplete. Why? One of the reasons mentioned in the purport is he wishes the living entities that are dormant within him in the susupti state during the cosmic annihilation to again be situated in loving dealings with him. Specifically, Bhaktisiddhanta says in Rasa Dance. So, I'll read the purport, just to put it in context. Because from that section, the early section of Sri Brahma Samhita, there's a bridge verse, and then he goes into creation, just as here. It's deep. It's part of the Lord's Leela. there's the Leela with his external energy, and there's a Leela with his internal energy. We think of Leela, Krishna's Leela is, let's say, his lifting of Govardhan Hill. That's a Leela. Or Damodar Leela, Krishna being bound by Mother Yashoda. And all the other Leelas of Raja. Those are his Leelas. Or there's Leelas in Dwarka. He does things. The marriage of Rukmini, or there's Leelas. They're eternal associates. It's a Leela that they're married. It's a Leela. So there's a Leela, similarly, with his external energy. And there's this sense of very surprising, but he's complete, so he has to have the capacity to include everything, including feeling incomplete. Here it is. Text 24, chapter 5, canto 3. The Lord, the undisputed proprietor of everything, was the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present at that time, and thus he felt imperfect. Without his plenary and separated parts and parcels, the material energy was dormant. I wanted to give her something to do. Whereas the internal potency was manifested, of course, eternally manifested. So he's associating with Rama Devi, Mahavishnu. That's her name, Lakshmi, or in the case of Mahavishnu, Rama Devi. He's with Rama Devi. So she knows, because she's his internal potency, exactly his will. And she detects it, and then she assists him, because that's what she does. Well, purport. The Lord is the supreme seer, because only by his glance did the material energy become active for cosmic manifestation. There's another purport where it's said, maybe it's the previous purport. Yeah. I'll read the previous verse in the first line of the purport. This is text 23. The personality of Godhead, the master of all living entities, existed prior to the creation as one without a second. It is by his will only that the creation is made possible, and again, everything merges in him. The Supreme Self is symptomized by different names. So in the purport, first line, Prabhupada is saying, here, Maitreya is giving commentary on the Chaturshloki verse, first of the Chaturshloki verses of the Bhagavatam. What are the Chaturshloki verses of Bhagavatam? There are four verses that are the essence of the whole Bhagavatam. Canto 2, chapter 9, texts 29 through 33. 29 through 32. 29 begins, Aham evasam eva agre. And the rest of it, the translation is, in the beginning, this is Lord Vishnu speaking to Brahma, before the creation. In the beginning, I alone exist. During the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. After cosmic annihilation, yes, I alone exist. The Mayavadis love that verse. Just see, all there is Brahman. And Prabhupada gives his commentary. That's not what he's saying. It's first person singular. There's the teaching, the Vyasadeva's teaching, is Shakti Parinama Vad. Vada means doctrine, or the teaching that Shakti, or potencies, are transformed. Sometimes those potencies are dormant, avyakta. Sometimes they're manifest, vyakta. So what's being said here is, this is a stage where they're dormant. but they're there. They're just dormant. And what makes them activated or undormant? The Lord's ichha. There's two parts to his desire. So again, purport, the Lord is the supreme seer because only by his glance did the material energy become active for cosmic creation. At that time, the seer was there. But the external energy over which the glance of the Lord is cast was not present. Well, it wasn't activated, but it was in a dormant state. That's called pradhan. Right? Pradhan. Okay. He felt somewhat insufficient. Whoa. Like a husband feeling lonely in the absence of his wife. This is a poetic simile. Not like a husband feeling separation from his wife. That's different. But it's like that. Wishing the enjoyment with his external potency who was dormant. The Lord wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead, and that is its main purpose. The Lord is so kind that in the absence of such manifestation, he feels something wanting. And thus the creation takes place. So before anything is his desire, and his desire is the living entity should come again in their loving mood in relation with him. But they're dormant within my body. And besides they're dormant, as soon as they're activated, they're going to be, you know, with their material desire and the whole thing. So I'm feeling incomplete. I'm feeling unhappiness. I'm feeling something is not sufficient. I'm not feeling. He's Avarama, but they should have. It's love. Although the creation of the internal potency was manifested, the other potency appeared to be sleeping, and the Lord wanted to awaken her to activity. So there's the other part. She was having nothing to do. And he knew that she wanted something to do, so he gave her something to do. It was his desire to give her something to do, to wake her up to activity. And then it happened. So those two internal desires. And he says it again in additional language. So now, continuing chapter 20, we finished with text 12 of chapter 20, so let's cover a few more verses, starting with 13. And if you remember where we are, Vidura is asking, what happened next? Brahma was created, and now there's going to be some Prajapatis, Swayambhuva Manu, for example, and Marichi. So what did Swayambhuva Manu and Marichi do? How did Lord Brahma fill in the universe? Because now we have a universe with Garbhadakshay, Vishnu, and Brahma inside. How did he fill out the rest? What did he enable them to do to make it become more matured or more developed? And then what did they do? Did they with their wives? Did it on their own? Did they do it cooperatively? How did it work? So we read the last verse, text 12, Maitreya is giving his first answer. There's equilibrium. Like pradhan state, where the combination of the three modes of nature, by the Lord's glance, by the force of time, and by the injection of living entities, became agitated. And And then, so it was. The total material elements were produced. That's just like a big warehouse. It's not assembled yet. Like Prabhupada uses unassembled motor parts in the automobile factory. There's a stage before there's the parts. Now it's the parts come into being by those three agencies. Text 13. As impelled by the destiny of the jivas, the false ego, which is of three kinds, evolved from the mahatattva, to which and in which the element of rajas predominates. From the ego, in turn, evolved many groups of five principles. Once you know the system, it's not difficult. When you just read the verses, what are you talking about? Okay. Purport. The primordial matter, or prakriti, material nature, consisting of the three modes, generates four groups of five. So, this is chapter 20, let's just preview 31, 32, the fundamental principles of material nature, Sankhya philosophy, Murkapilade. So he goes into it this way. The glance, pradhan, starts to differentiate. First comes false ego. Now already within prakriti are the modes of material nature. But the modes are there, but they're not active because the living entities aren't there and time isn't there. Living entities there and time is there, they become activated. So, motive, false ego, mixing with the motive goodness. What's...
Passion?
There's three modes. Goodness, passion, ignorance. So, mixing with the motive goodness comes the mind. With passion, intelligence. With ignorance, three sets of five. Four sets of five. The five material elements, the five knowledge-acquiring senses, the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses. Four groups of five. So that's 4 times 5 is 20, plus false ego, plus mind, plus intelligence. That's 23. We have one more to go, and we have 24. That's Sankhya. Now back to here. So, Prabhupada goes through these four groups of five, and then he says, some say that there are five groups of five. And he goes through the four groups. And then the fifth group is the five deities who control these divisions. Remember yesterday, the prototype demigods? Five deities that control these divisions. He doesn't elaborate, he just drops it and moves on. So it comes up later. It's kind of like a puzzle. Where does this piece go? Where does that piece go? Let me see. It takes a while to figure out how the puzzle goes together. So it's not linear. The Bhagavatam isn't doing it in that fashion. But the clues are there. Some say, so five deities who control these divisions. Text 14. Separately, unable to produce the material universe, they combined with the help of the energy of the Supreme Lord and were able to produce a shining egg. So, remember I mentioned yesterday? The prototype demigods, and I don't have the verse, maybe this evening, the prototype demigods couldn't get it together. They weren't cooperating, is the language that's used. We know what that's like. Somebody's in charge of this, and somebody's in charge of that, and they're not cooperating. But they knew they were supposed to do something, but they couldn't do what they were supposed to do because they have to have cooperation. So they prayed to the Supreme Lord. Please give us the ability that we can carry out our service, because without you we can't carry out. So then, they combined with the help of the energy of the Supreme Lord
and were able to produce a shining egg, like a universe. No purport. Text 15. For over 1,000 years, the shiny egg, and actually there's multiple universes, so it's eggs, lay on the waters of the causal ocean in a lifeless state. Then the Lord entered it as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. So our Acharya's comment. The Lord was, he was enjoying his pastimes with Ramadevi. And one Acharya, the Vira Raghava Acharya, says, he was demonstrating his position of detachment. Like, you know, he is not dependent on it, and it is dependent upon him. It, the creation, is dependent upon him. But 1,000, not just 1,000 solar years, 1,000 celestial years, 1,000 years. And he was just enjoying with Ramadevi, and the universes were just floating. And then he entered as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Text 16. This is the last verse. From the navel of the personality of Godhead, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, sprouted a lotus flower, effulgent like 1,000 blazing suns. This lotus flower is the reservoir of all conditioned souls. And the first living entity who came out of the lotus flower was the omnipotent Brahma. So here's the description, like slow motion. Again, our Acharya is assisting. During the cosmic annihilation, all living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu. Through his glance, they're impregnated into the to Pradhan. And then the Pradhan differentiates into the elements, Mahatattva. So there's the elements, there's the living entities. Then come the seeds from his body that enter into Mahatattva. And the elements start to congeal around the seeds. So the seeds then enlarge, but they're not able to do the whole thing that the seeds are supposed to do. The prototype demigods pray to the Supreme Lord. Then they're given the ability to form this shining golden egg, and there's so many of them, then they're floating in the causal ocean. Then Mahavishnu expands as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. So Garbhodakshay Vishnu, the way that it's described, is not only enters within the universe, but the collective totality of the conditioned souls, some portion of them accompany each Garbhodakshay Vishnu that enters into each of the so many universes that are floating in the causal ocean. And then within his body are those living entities, who then come out of his body in the form of the lotus flower, or within the lotus flower, the lotus stem, are those living entities from the body of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. There's another place that says the bud of the lotus that comes from his stem represents, or it is a presentation of the sinful reactions, the karmic reactions, you know, the involvement in material nature reactions in the form of a lotus stem. It gets really, like, amazingly sophisticated, something like, you know, a graduate engineering course or something. Really technical. Purport. It appears from this verse that the conditioned souls who rested within the body of the personality of Godhead after the dissolution of the last creation came out in the sum total form of the lotus. This is called Hiranyagarbha. The term Hiranyagarbha I mentioned yesterday as the prototype Brahma. Hiranyagarbha is a term that also is used sometimes to indicate Garbhadakshay Vishnu, because Garbha, the egg of the universe, he is which is golden in color, he's there. He's that. He's present as Hiranyagarbha. The first living entity to come out was Lord Brahma, who is independently able to create the rest of the manifested universe. The lotus is described here as effulgent as the glare of a thousand suns. This indicates that living entities, as parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are also of the same quality, since the Lord also diffuses his bodily glare, known as Brahmajyoti. The description of Vaikuntha, as stated in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literature, is confirmed herewith. In Vaikuntha, the spiritual sky, there is no need of sunshine, moonshine, electricity, or fire. Every planet there is self-sufficient, self-effulgent, like the sun. So it gets more interesting as you go along in the chapter, the process of creation. The question that Vidura has asked is in relation to what Brahma does. But this is setting the stage for Brahma to do. And the intelligence to know what to do is given by the Supreme Lord, and is given to a person who's by piety and other faculties is capable. Like we were told how to create a universe, you know, good luck. But he has the capacity. He has not only acumen, he has the means to support that all of that understanding and the spiritual potency to create. The Srishti Shakti. It's one of the categories of Lord Brahma as an avatar, the bearers of the Lord's creative potency invested by the Lord. So he acts in that capacity like the Lord, as he does as the Guna avatar. He's simultaneously a Shaktivesha avatar bearing the Lord's creative potency just to serve him. And everything that he needs to do it is provided by the source of everything. So he's the chief engineer rather than the creator, although sometimes and commonly called the creator of the universe. He's the engineer, like multiple departments engineers. He's like not just the department head of one engineering department, he's the head of all engineering departments. Professor Brahma. And he has the capacity to, as he did with Swayambhuva Manu, just produce Swayambhuva Manu from his own body. And not only Swayambhuva Manu, but Shatarupa, his wife. And they weren't just like little babies. They were fully matured personalities, ready to go, to do the Manu program, according to his desire. That's how qualified Brahma is. He's not like us. His capacity comes from the Supreme Lord. And again, he's invested with his capacity because he's qualified. There's more details, but you can read further and maybe we'll discuss again in the evening. See if there's any discussion. Yeah. Time is very flexible. Oh, Yeah, but you know, some of them are bigger and some of them are smaller, and you know, there's higher planets and lower planets, and time is very, very flexible according to the Lord's will. But it's very flexible even in the spiritual world. It's part of the Lord's omnipotency, as he can use his energies however he likes, and time energy is one of them, and very flexible. And space also, very flexible. You know, we're very not so flexible. You know, we not only know, like, something that I've come across, a little surprising, maybe not, shouldn't be, but a little surprising, is it seems like the current generation of young people have a big problem with accepting mystic potencies. Like there's got to be a mechanistic explanation for them. And even if they're told, all it is subtle manipulation of material laws that exist. That's all what mystic powers are. It's nothing, it's not spiritual. It's material. It's subtle material. Somebody, you know, has an ability, they know the laws, and they manipulate the laws in subtle ways, and they can do things that you can't do. It's, you know, no. They can't go there. They can hear all kinds of other things, but they can't hear that one. I was surprised. It was University of Illinois. It was both an Indian student and an American student. They were polite enough to not, like, jump up and down during the class. They spoke, came to me afterwards and said, you know, I'm sorry, I can't accept this. Why not? Well, you know, there's got to be a material explanation. So you're calling it mystic power, and it's just a material, that's all it is. Because that's all there is. And they're so used to hearing it, they've been been drummed in their head. Well, you know, can you go a little bit and just say it's subtle manipulation of those laws, that's all. And somebody knows how to subtly manipulate the laws. No. There's so many things that are going on that technology is creating that, you know, it's just, that's all it is too, subtle manipulation of laws. For some reason, they can't accept it. I don't know why. I guess I know why, but... And these are people that are coming to a program about spirituality. Anyway. So this is Brahma knows the art of doing things that we don't know how to do. Lots of people that know how to do things I don't know how to do. I don't have a problem with that. And I know something to do some things they don't know how to do. So that doesn't make me special. Anyway, Brahma is a very capable personality. And is entrusted with a lot of responsibility, a lot of power on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Anything else? Okay. Hare Krishna.